Hello and welcome to everyone tuning in. You're listening to another episode of Trailblazing Leaders of Tomorrow, a podcast series by the Black Policy Institute and the Young People's Advisory Board. I'm your host today, Ruth Simone Lee, the UK International Chair of the Young People's Advisory Board. I'm thrilled to have you with us as we celebrate visionary leaders who are shaping our future. Now let me introduce my co-host for today, Elijah.
Hi everyone, I'm Elijah. I'm a policy advisor at the Black Policy Institute and I'm absolutely thrilled to be one of the co-hosts for this podcast. I'm joined today by none other than Blaze. Would you like to tell us a bit about yourself?
Yes, absolutely. It's great to be here. Everyone, I'm Blaze. I'm an associate at Freshfields in the employment team. So I deal with everything employment, pensions, share incentives, all the good stuff. Just really excited. When Ruth reached out to me, I jumped on it straight away, so can't wait to get into
brilliant.
It.
Thank you
for being here today, Blaze. It's my pleasure to have you, and Elijah's
definitely.
Okay, now just let's start off with your journey into law, Blaze. So what inspired you to pursue a career in this field? Were there any specific events or experiences in your life that really motivated you to be a lawyer?
Good question, and I apologize for my life story here. So I grew up in Rwanda, so in East Africa, and I had a pretty good upbringing, and sort of the notion of justice had never really been that apparent to me until my family faced its own injustice and we had to move here as asylum seekers. So at that point I was around 10 years old, and I remember it was the first time thinking, the justice system is a bit messed up. I would like to know a little bit more. So that's kind of the first part of it. And then really to end up where I am right now, I had to have an interest in business as well. So my father had a lot of businesses back home. He would take me to the warehouses and kind of the factories just to see. So straight away from young, I always kind of knew that business and kind of how the world works is something which I'm very, very interested in. But of course, at that point, I had no idea what commercial law was. So my dream initially was to become a footballer.
What team?
Well, I support Arsenal.
Okay, Let's go back to the focus. Man United only. Moving back.
So I support Arsenal, but I moved to Manchester when I came to England.
Smart lad.
So me and my brother were like, oh my God, our dream of becoming footballers is happening. Like, obviously in Rwanda, it's a little bit less likely. So like, we are in England, Premier League, here we go. my brother was much better than me. So he got scouted by Manchester United.
Oh, wow. Oh.
Yeah. Now, I was this size. For those who can't see, I'm like 5'11", 6'4", if you're being nice. I was this size from year 7-ish.
Okay. Wow.
So I remember going to watch my brother train at Manchester United, and the coach looked at me, he's like, you're big, how old are you?
You're a bit tall for this, aren't you?
And he was like, 13, do you play football? I said, yes. Or do you want to come for a trial? It was the strangest way to get a Manchester United trial. So anyway, signed for Manchester United with my brother.
Yeah.
Bolton Wanderers came looking for my brother. So he transferred over to Bolton, okay. And my dad
he had the pig. He just swimming in things. It's amazing.
But my dad was like, I'm not going to take you training to Bolton and take him training to Manchester United. So if you're taking one, you're taking both of them.
Okay,
so right. I moved over to Bolton too with my brother. And that's really where most of my career was. Played there until I was 16. The dream was very much alive. But then at that point, a lot of politics and football, which I won't get into, we didn't make it. And so we had to figure out what else are we going to do with our lives. At this point, we've just finished GCSEs. We're going to college. What subjects are we doing? Right. Then at that point, I remembered, I'm interested in law.
Wait a minute.
I am interested in law.
Years ago.
Yeah. I'm interested in business. And the one that is kind of like an overarching one is economics. So I did law, business and economics at A levels. And that's instantly where I was like, okay, this is definitely the area I want to be in. It's just so interesting. It's so challenging, but I like the complexity of it. Then went to university, still had no idea what commercial law was. And then I received a talk from someone from Freshfields. And really from then on, that was kind of tunnel vision. That's kind of where I wanted to be. So very happy to be here. And that's a little bit about how I got here.
Okay, cool. I'm definitely like a bit more curious to look at kind of the beginning of your story. You mentioned how growing up in Rwanda, I believe, you didn't really have a notion of justice or injustice until an injustice had like occurred. Mm-hmm. And then that's what kind of led you to potentially think about law, kind of like catalyst.
Yeah.
Like, obviously not going too deep into the situation itself, but could you speak a bit more about how you felt that, learning about injustice as a concept then translated into pursuing a potential career in law? What were some of the factors that were at play that made you kind of go down that route in particular?
Yeah, it's a good question. So I think when I experienced that, I was very young, but I do remember growing up very, very quickly when all that happened. So that realization of the justice system made me realize actually how much is wrong with so much, not just in Rwanda itself, but just in the general world. So instantly, I grew up a lot, which meant that the books I was reading were now different. I was reading more kind of philosophical books. Okay. And so about that. So really, that was the big change that happened. I just became an adult from a very, very young age. And really what that meant was, as my dad puts it, I needed to find an grown-up job. So as he says it.
I like that. You know?
I'm not a mathematician. I'm not a scientist. So it had to be to do with words. And
that is lawyers for you. Never great at maths.
And yeah, so yeah. And here I am. So it was literally that growing up bit that made me realize, okay, I need to find something serious to do.
Okay.
And law became that.
So would it be fair to say, like, it was a combination of obviously how you felt towards the legal system combined with the skills that you had or what you knew you were interested in or not interested in? You were more of a words person, not so much a numbers person.
Yeah.
And then as you grew up, business kind of found its way. It seems like business kind of weaved its way in a bit later on in life. Or would you say maybe from the earlier?
No, I think you're absolutely right. And really, I think the thing that came out of it in that early stage was a lot of curiosity about law, in a sense of everything I read. Every law I read at the time just seemed very wrong. It seemed confused. It seemed like it wasn't achieving what it was supposed to achieve. So I remember reading something, which again, I won't bore you with, just about kind of the immigration laws around the East African area. I was just like, none of this makes sense. And no one was giving me an answer. So I was like, okay, I need to find a way to get these answers. And the best way I thought, study law, try become a lawyer and see what you find there. So yeah, it was a lot of sort of moving parts. But I think in that early stage, business was always with me. As I said, you know, my dad would give me that exposure as much, so it wasn't something I was so actively thinking about. Mm-hmm. And as you say, without the injustice, a lot of people don't really think that justice is kind of a problem, and so that was me. So business has always been in that journey, but law really triggered by that particular experience.
Thank you for that, Blaise. That was very fascinating. As we spent time researching you, we realised that one of your notable achievements is being selected as a Stephen Lawrence Scholar. What did it mean to you to be a part of such a prestigious scholarship programme, and how did it contribute to your legal career?
So I've said this many times, but that is where my life changed completely. When I got that scholarship, that's when my career changed completely. The person I was before then and now is two different people. And so I remember when I went to the assessment centre, let me take it back. When I got the email about the opportunity, I was still in first year uni. None of my family does law. I had literally didn't even know what Fresh Fields was. So I just thought, they're giving £3,000 in grant money. I'm a student. I could really use that. I'm gonna try and
get
that.
Take the opportunities when they come.
So that's really what sparked the interest. And I remember coming to the inside day. So there's like an inside day they do for everyone who wants to apply. And I walked in the Freshville office and I was like, oh my God. So this place is real. The place that I see on movies and the
corporate. The place that reminds you of Suits.
Suits actually looks like this.
It's absolutely real. And it was really when I started speaking to the people, realizing it's just normal people who managed to get here. And that was really a revelation for me. And I was like, okay, I can definitely do this. Along comes the assessment center. Which was the most brutal thing I've ever done in my entire life.
Don't scare me.
It was a two-day assessment center. full 2 days. And no questions about law, just like psychometric tests, critical thinking tests and things like that, with like 100 other black male students who are so driven, so motivated. So I went home, called my dad. I was like, it's not happening. There's no chance I've got that. No, I messed up every single exercise. He was like, well, it's the experience that counts. Lo and behold, 2 months later, maybe a month later, I get a call from one of the Fresh Fools partners saying, Blaise, you've got the scholarship. Completely speechless. And that's when really, because I said, no one in my family did law. I had no prior experience. So to get something so prestigious, really by myself, like just going out there and sort of getting it, that's when I was like, okay, I'm built different. I think there's something I've got that other people might not have, because to be selected 12 out of 100 and something people.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's really amazing.
And then the scholarship itself came around. So it's a 15-month program, which involves kind of mentoring as well. So we got mentors from Freshfield, two mentors from Freshfield, Bank of England, Goldman Sachs as well. And then work experience at all those sort of firms that I just mentioned.
Yeah.
And then the most important thing for me was kind of how it threw you into the deep end. So I remember we had to do a debate at Goldman Sachs in front of all the partners that and directors.
Very scary.
And the debate topic was, should rich people pay more tax? And I was arguing for yes, they should. And in a room full of very, very rich people, I was very nervous. But that's when I realized, wow, I'm actually so articulate. I can actually get my words out. And really, the Steve Lawrence changed everything. The people I met, the network, the confidence that I have now. As I said, I don't really have imposter syndrome anymore because I don't think there's nothing that I can't do because of that Steve Lawrence scholarship. So I will always hold that very, very tight to my chest. But yeah, no, life changing.
It's really interesting you mentioned like your time kind of doing things on the Steve Lawrence Foundation. I'd love to just like know a bit more about like how it works, because you mentioned you got a call from Freshfields, but yeah. So did you have to apply to the Steve Lawrence Foundation and then do an additional test at Freshfields, and then they will decide who, like, how was the process like?
So it's actually, so the Steve Lawrence Scholarship is a Freshfields scheme, but it's in collaboration with the Steve Lawrence Foundation. Founders were Doreen, Steven's mom, and Annette Byron, who's the kind of Freshfields diversity partner. So it's all run by Freshfields, and you know, every now and then we get Doreen to come and speak and so, but it was all through Freshfields, applied to Freshfields. It was Freshfield people who are assessing you, and then you still get a call from Freshfields as well.
So it must be really interesting then, like having experiences, obviously you said doing debates with like Goldman Sachs, trying to convince a lot of rich people to pay more tax. And then I believe like from your career, like you went on to go and work there later on. Yeah. So what was it like working in an environment like Goldman Sachs compared to like an environment like Freshfields, that kind of legal versus finance kind of, 'cause I mean, I currently work in financial services. I haven't got any kind of like, you know, law backgrounds, but I know what that's like. I can only imagine from what you're saying what the law is like, but what's the comparison like for you?
Yeah, so it's actually a good question, because in that summer I did my vacation scheme at Freshfields, and then 2 days later I started at Goldman Sachs for 3 weeks. So I was able to see that contrast very, very like bold. So at Freshfields, I think the main difference that I saw so instantly is the pace of how things are done. Now obviously at Goldman Sachs I was in the legal team for a week, and then I went to the operations team for a little bit. And in the legal team, obviously they're in-house, so if they need something done very quickly, they should send it to us, and kind of we do it very quickly. So I realized that it was more from 9 to 6, they were extremely busy at Goldman, very, very busy, but then they'll be done at 6. Freshfields, it's from 9 till whenever the work is done, you just do it and make sure you meet the client expectation. So that was the first thing I realized. Secondly, of course, the Goldman building, it was just new. Oh, it was incredible. It was just...
in buildings.
Honestly.
It's a lawyer's
By the building.
I'll tell you why.
Lawyers and law students. I resonate with it. I really do.
No, it's fair. I'll tell you why. When I dream, any kind of dream that I have, it's usually defined by the surroundings that I have. So when I was dreaming to be a lawyer, it was kind of imagining this big, glassy sort of buildings, suits every day, which is why I'm wearing a suit and tie every day.
For listening, I'm wearing a tracksuit right now, so shots fired, but it's all right.
No, we like tracksuits.
Not me.
Dress for your day. it was one of those things where when I walked into Goldman Sachs, I think the first time I actually thinking, oh my God, I'm in the big boys now. Like the conversations I used to have, the friends that I used to have, they need to know that I'm in the big boys now, because I am. And that confidence is just something which a lot of black students don't have, because as I said, probably no one's done law in their family. They haven't had this exposure. Mm-hmm. So that imposter syndrome is very strong. But you just see it. It really changes everything. So I would urge anyone, if you have a dream, visualize it. If there's anything you can see to really kind of visualize in your mind, please do that, because then it becomes real. Going back to the question in terms of how different it was. More fast paced through the day, but then it sort of chills off in the evening. But I do remember going to the trading floor for one day. That was the most chaotic day of my entire life.
Welcome to my world.
As I said, I don't do maths, so I was just looking at the screens. It's just graphs and numbers, everyone's screaming and shouting, and I thought, okay, this is Goldman Sachs. Like this is
what they do. This is how they operate.
Yeah. And it really made me realize that I love my job and I love what I do, because I could not be in a chaotic environment for the whole day. No.
Never.
I like that we are very focused in terms of what we do. I'm sure they are. That's their version.
Yeah. But that's the great thing, I think, is like, it's about, especially for like young black students, it's about finding out what you're interested in, even if you don't know what that is as a career. It's finding out what motivates you as a person, what your values are, and finding things that align with that. Because had you not known that when you were younger you were someone who was more into words instead of numbers, you may have looked at, you know, injustice very differently and gone down a very different, maybe more analytical route, you know what I mean? But like, that's, so it was that kind of knowledge, I think, that really helped.
That is actually such a good point, because a lot of people sort of see the prestige of the legal career and think, okay, that's where I want to go, without actually thinking, do I love what comes with it? Like, what I actually have to do? And so I would echo everything that you just said there. You got to figure out what you love, and don't do it in a, I love it because it will make my parents proud, or I love it because I'll make a lot of money. Not genuinely. What do you get up and you're very excited to do? Mine was football. I tried a career that way, didn't work, so I had to figure out something else I like. So, no, 100% agree with you there.
Brilliant.
And then, so the next thing that we wanted to ask you was in terms of challenges and building up your resilience, is when it comes to your career, can you share any moments where you experienced a setback or doubts, and how did you overcome and what did you learn from those experiences?
Yeah, so there are three which always spring to mind when I hear about sort of challenges that I faced. The first one is when I came to this country, no English, so I was a French speaking boy. I had a stutter, a really bad stutter actually. And so I remember trying to connect with people, trying to make friends. One, I can't speak the language. Every word I tried to say is taking me like 5 hours to get it out. So I remember that was a really big challenging thing that I had to deal with for a good 5 to 6 years. I hadn't really quite figured out how, like, what I'm supposed to do. Like, I heard people saying you could do breathing exercises for stutters, but I was like, I don't know what that means. So that was the biggest challenge, and really the only way I overcame that was just, I realized my home country is gone. I'm not going back to Rwanda anytime soon. This is my new home. I need to kind of immerse myself and throw myself into it, and so I'm just going to do things which I don't want to do. So if I get asked to do a presentation, my initial reaction, my initial body reaction would be, no, I'm nervous, I can't speak, I stutter, I can't do that. Every time I would get that reaction, I would do it. So that would be like a trigger to, yes, let's do it. And I found that actually nobody really cares about the stutter, as long as you get away your points and everything. So that was probably the biggest challenge I faced in terms of getting to where I am today.
Okay.
The second one was football not working out. Kind of being released. We were so close.
Honestly, I feel it for you. Do you know what I mean? And your brother, honestly.
I know. So he was older than me, so he got released first.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Big bummer in the family. And my dad was like, okay, Blaze, you got this. You got 2 years. So he was 2 years ahead of me. You got this. Guess there. Same meeting. So he must have had two of those meetings saying, sorry, we're going to have to let you go.
Oh, wow.
And at that point, I hadn't really thought about what else I could do. So that was the biggest disappointment I've ever felt. The first time I've ever cried.
So now you say that, how did you get over that? Because for a lot of young people right now, applying to things, they're getting a lot of rejection and stuff like that.
It's not quite football contracts, but it might be like training contracts, or it might be
finance job after you finish uni or something like that. So just people facing rejection at the moment, what advice would you give them to kind of say, you can get past this moment, this is not your forever at this time?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, what I will say is, the good times end and the bad times end. They all do end. Now, from my own personal experience, that time when I got released from Bolton, I didn't handle it very well. There was like a good 2 years where I just wasn't healthy. I wasn't sleeping very well. There was a lack of care in terms of what I wanted to do. And it was only when I failed first year A-levels, that it kicked me up. I was like, hey, I need to get up. I really need to get up. So what I would say is, if you're feeling down, if you feel like you've faced some disappointment, write it out. Time will not stop. Time will keep going. So just write it out.
Sorry to cut you off there, but time will go past, will leave you behind.
That's what I mean.
It doesn't wait for nobody.
Like, every day, just take a step forward. That's all you can do when you're going through those difficult times. Don't think about what you're going to do in 5 years. No. Just take a step every single day. So that's the biggest advice that I would give for anyone who's going through that. And then just one more thing is that the only way to success is through failure. I've never met anybody who's been successful and has never had a single failure. So I learned that from that football experience, which helped me when I was getting a lot of rejections in applications for training contracts and stuff. But
you already had the pre-game.
You know what I mean? I had the pre-game. Yeah, ready to go. But I meet so many students who've had a few rejections. They're like, I'm done. I don't think this is for me. And I'm like, no, just take a
what
step
you
forward.
Mean? You got to get back up.
You know what I mean? Just take another step.
When I get knocked off that horse, I come back fighting. Yeah, you're going to hear me.
Someone said, just one final call. Someone said to me, always keep one more in you. Just one more. Just one more go. Yeah, always.
I love that. So you've like, you know, we spoke about like upbringing, motivations for law, you know, your career, things that you've learned along the way. And then we're kind of touching on like, you know, advice you'd give to like younger generations kind of, you know, coming up. How do you feel in terms of your industry's response to the ever-growing demand and the business case for diversity? So, and by that I mean like the legal profession as a whole, not just like Freshfields or Goldman's, like just in general, do you feel like there is like an appetite for diversity? Do you feel like there's a lot of lip service? How do you feel like your industry in particular responds to it?
So me personally, I do feel like there's a lot of lip service. I will be very honest. I remember from university, they were all saying they care about diversity. They're doing kind of all they can. But it was only the Steve Lawrence Scholarship that I thought was a tangible thing that someone's doing to get people into this space. So for me, I think what we need and the appetite that is currently there is very much to recruit. Let me just show some numbers so I can recruit some people. But actually, when you think about it, have you guys ever seen any targets for partners being so ethnic minorities? I've never seen targets for. Like there's all trainees, associates, yes. Mm-hmm. But I think if we're really going to take this seriously as an industry, it needs to go from top to bottom.
Yeah.
And actually put in place programs which have an output in the end. And not just, come to a networking event, see who you meet. It's like, no, let me actually put you in this program for 10 months, give you all the skills that you need. And because everyone, if you give them the skills they need and the coaching and the information that they need, they can do this job. Like, yeah. I'm not anything.
It's not really easy.
No. It's, no.
Hey,
anyone listening, that is not true. It's definitely not easy, but it is doable. It is not a rocket science. Like, it's just common sense and logic. But I think the biggest thing is you don't know where to find that common sense and logic. That's all usually if no one's done law. Yeah. So I think there needs to be programs which are just more output driven rather than just kind of statistics driven, if you know what I mean.
Completely.
I would say for how long I've been in the industry, it's not been that long. I have seen improvements. I definitely have, especially at Freshfields. The associates group is growing so much.
I mean, yeah, with the Stephen Lawrence Foundation, they
honestly,
must be like,
there's so many. There's so many. And I just want to see a few more of those for women, for different groups, really.
That's interesting. I think, like, it's always interesting to hear because there's always two arguments. There's the argument that not enough is being done, but if you do more, you're kind of almost forcing a narrative that you want to be kind of occurred naturally.
I like that. Force it.
Force it. And I just feel like as well, like you force it for other things. Like when you think of like gender equality and stuff, there's very strict guidance on like, you need to have like a 50% this or an equal pay gap. These are like overnight changes in policy and practices.
Yeah.
So I just don't see why it's the same with race. So I definitely think you should force it. But there is a viewpoint, even within the black community, that like, I don't like with the police, for example, so something that will happen quite a lot. They basically lowered criteria in order to get more young black males to enter the police force.
Yeah.
And it led to like later problems with like talent development and retention within the police force, because essentially you don't have as good or as sound officers because they hadn't been trained to that certain standard previously. And so there's definitely the argument about diversity initiatives and how impactful they are, but I feel like it's a lot easier to clean up the mess once you've got them in and they're not maybe performing to the standard that you necessarily want than you would not having any of them in at all. I think that's a much more damaging thing.
And you know, that whole point of the people are coming in, they don't have the necessary skills, and it kind of hurts the business later down the line. That's because when you brought them in, it was just a tick box exercise.
Yeah,
you didn't actually say, okay, how can I develop this person to be a good police officer? For example,
it's very true.
You've lowered their criteria, but you need to give them training to get back to that criteria that you used to have.
You account for it.
Do you know what I mean? So I think really it's more about taking ownership of the fact that it needs to be forced. It does need to, especially with the partnership people. If someone is almost good enough and they're black or the kind of ethnic minority, give them the chance. Like, throw them in the deep end and see how they do. If they don't do well, great. But give them the chance of, instead of just saying, oh, hold out 5 more years. Because they hold out 5 more years, they go somewhere else.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Exactly. And that's gone. Yeah. Very true. So, yeah, no, I definitely agree with you there.
Okay. And now moving on to a bit more of the future of law and your leadership. In a world that's facing so many growing challenges like climate change, social justice, and the growth of technology, how do you think current solicitors like yourself and aspiring legal professionals should position themselves to lead effectively in the future?
I think we all really need to embrace technology. I think that will make or break a lot of careers in the future. And so I see a lot of things which says, you know, no, lawyers will never be replaced. They can't, you know, they need that human need. That's true. That is true. But there are a lot of jobs that can be done by AI. That and so what it will happen is there'll be the AI doing that thing, but the firm will need people who know how to use the AI to supervise it and to monitor and so on. So if you don't know how to use the tech and you just haven't embraced the need of that technology, that's going to be a problem. And I think for young lawyers, it's easier because we're all kind of growing up in this space of technology and new things are coming, you know, Web 3, Metaverse, things are coming into play. But for the older sort of demographic, I think really forget the old ways, because when the internet came in 1999, 2000, everyone was like, no, absolutely no. What do you mean you're just going to type and the message is going to him? That's never going to happen. And then it changed everything forever. So this whole new idea of AI, a computer doing something for you, or Web3 actually being in a physical, seeing everybody, but they're not actually there physically in the room. I think that is going to happen. I think it's the natural evolution of the internet. Yeah. And so as lawyers, really, one, think about how to use it and be good at using it. And then two, start thinking critically, like as a lawyer, because this is going to have to get regulated quite heavily. It sort of needs to, for it to not be harmful to society. And we are in the perfect position. We already understand the law. We understand how to critique it. Mm-hmm. Start thinking about that. Like right now, if you see ChatGPT, what can you regulate about it? Write a paper maybe, because it will eventually come into play and you want to be in a position where you can contribute to your firm, to your chambers, or kind of wherever you work with, by having this prior knowledge. So I would definitely say embrace the tech, use the tech, and critique the tech.
I must say, I've got a personal confession. I'm actually not so good with AI and tech myself. And I'm a young person, so like, I'm only 24. I feel like I should... I feel like I should definitely like know a lot more than I do and start to embrace it a lot more.
I mean, what I would say, go on YouTube, just watch some videos. Yeah. I don't know much about it either.
You can take a leaf from Blaze.
It's true. I need to get on my Zoom. Well, thank you so much for tuning in to this, you know, episode. But I wanted to ask you one last question.
Yeah, of course.
If that's all right. So what are your, like, you know, personal and professional goals for the future? And what is the legacy you want to leave for the world? Tough one, right?
It is a tough one. And I was telling Ruth I could talk forever on this question, so I will just keep it brief. The legacy that I want to leave is everybody in the world realizing how great Africa is. That is my legacy that I will leave. Me and my family will definitely do that. And as a legal professional, I want to have a law firm from Africa. It doesn't matter which country, known as one of the best law firms in the world. Because right now, when anyone thinks of, you know, Africa or African countries, they think corrupt, the justice system is terrible. And I really, really want to change that to the point where people trust us to handle their legal documents, their transactions, their litigation, because we are definitely capable. There's just this misconception that we are more corrupt than the rest of the world, which I don't think we are. So my legacy is making people realize how great we are, but also having the biggest law firm in the world being from Africa. I would love to see that for you.
Yeah. And if they're hiring, then I'll recommend some young students to come along the way.
I'm coming to get you all, don't worry.
Well, Blaze, thank you so much for joining us today and helping and sharing your journey with us. It's been inspiring and I've resonated with a lot of what you said. And we're sure our listeners will take a lot away from this conversation.
Definitely.
Thank you, guys.
Appreciate catching up with you again.
Yeah, thanks for having me. No, it's been really fun. Gosh, that went by very quickly, didn't it?
I know. It's a good little chat.
Yeah, it was. Until next time, everybody, take care and keep trailblazing. This was Trailblazing Leaders of Tomorrow by the Black Policy Institute and our Young People's Advisory Board. Bye-bye.
See you.
Trailblazing. I like that. Really like that.